Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
And so I want something with some lower sides, but the oarlocks have to be high. And I thought, you know, I think I can do this in a really aesthetic way and curve these sides. And instead of having like a straight raised oarlock, because at the time people had low sided boats with the raised oarlock, but it was just kind of a blocky affair. And so I built that first boat for John and called it the Recurve. It's been almost the only hull that I make anymore.
That was Jason Cajun sharing the Recurve story, a feature that has helped him stand out from the crowd. This and how he flipped over a drift boat in whitewater today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today. We'll help you on your fly fishing journey with classic stories covering steelhead fishing, fly tying, and much more.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. If you can, let's take a quick stop right now and just share this great episode. I know you're going to love it. And I'd love to get the word out to somebody who isn't aware of the drift boat series we have going. This one is loaded with some good content, including how you can build your own boat. You build something that looks like what Jason has going here. So let's stop and share this one out. And then we'll get back to the intro. Jason Cajun is here today to provide the story of how he started building boats and getting into boats as a kid up at Glacier National Park. We find out who his big influences were along the way, why his boat looks so much like an ocean-going vessel, and the story of building a specific boat so he could run the Grand Canyon. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsors. TurtleBox is a new company I've been working with this year. They build an amazing portable speaker that is louder and more rugged than anything I've ever encountered. Unlike most other portable speakers out there, the TurtleBox was specifically built with the sportsman in mind. The quality of this speaker is truly unreal. I've talked with the guys at TurtleBox, saw dudes by the way. They love the outdoors and are all avid sportsmen. This is a product I can truly say does not disappoint. Go ahead and check the guys out at turtleboxaudio.com. So without further ado, here is Jason Cajun from cajunboats.com.
How's it going, Jason?
It's going great, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on here. I've been wanting to get you on for a while now as we've been doing this drift boat season. And, you know, your boats, when I first saw them, I didn't know much about the stitch and glue. So we're going to dig into what that's all about and why your boats look so, you know, amazing out there. They look different than a lot of other things you see. But before we get into all that, can you just take us back to... You know, I'm not sure where you got started with boats, but how did you get into it? And then how did you come to own a company now?
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of a strange story in a way, because growing up in Montana, obviously not the biggest boat building community, but strangely, I grew up in the boat community. My folks ran a boat called the Cinnipaw, which was a 45-foot wood Carvel planked, fully wood boat built in 1927 on a lake called Two Medicine Lake inside Glacier National Park. And so from the time I was a very small kid, I was working on boats in Glacier Park, alongside my folks. And they did that for about 35 years. and as part of what's called the Glacier Park Boat Company. And the boat company dates back to the 30s and operates all of the excursion boats or tour boats in Glacier Park. So all of the big lakes have boats on them. And four of them date back to the 20s and were commissioned by the Great Northern Railway. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a strange upbringing, you know, in the summertime for, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 months, I was up in Glacier Park and was, you know, kind of the boat boy and the dock kid. We had a fleet of rental boats and then eventually I learned a fair amount about working on these old Carvel planked boats. Carvel just means plank on frame. You have ribs and then big planks. And, you know, by the time I got into my late teens, I was driving the boats and became a boat captain up there on these inland lakes. And so that was kind of an interesting way to grow up. And before I knew it, you know, it's kind of one of the only things I knew how to do.
Right, right, right. This is awesome. I love, you know, the start here because, you know, I've been digging into the history of the boats and we had an episode with Roger back. Let's see, I can't remember what episode it was, but it was near the start where he talked about the history of drift boats. But you're talking about now these Carvel boats. Can you describe, is this more of a... like, this is not a drift boat, right? This is more of like a sailing type boat, or what is it exactly?
Well, it's a motor boat, and the smallest one up there is 45 feet. The largest one is 90 feet, which is up on Waterton Lake and goes across the border. And there's two sister ships, the Cinnipaw and the Little Chief, and then a boat kind of in between the De Smet, which is 65 feet. They'll carry, the smallest ones carry 49 passengers. The largest ones carry 90. And they're just very unique, very narrow beam boats. Like I said, 45 feet to 90 feet in length, usually powered by like a 50 to 150 horsepower motor. And they're very old. And they're taken out of the water every year. You know, we pull them out and pull them into the boathouse, get a lot of work done on them in the fall and in the spring, and then dunk them in and carry thousands of passengers a year up and down these lakes and drop them off into the backcountry of Glacier.
Okay. And where would you, if you just wanted to look at these boats, where would you, is there a place you can go just to take a look at what they look like?
Sure. Yeah. Glacier Park Boat Company has a website. Yeah. And then Glacier National Park features the boats, you know, in some of their literature because the boats are at this point on the historic registry since they're so old. And, you know, the Cinnipaw, the boat that I grew up on, is nearing 100 years old here. Wow. In a few years. So, yeah, really unique. It's getting a complete overhaul right now up in the Flathead Valley. So, yeah, it was a real interesting kind of childhood for sure during the summers when we were up there. You know, I didn't play Little League baseball. I was inside a national park. And, you know, we had a fleet of little wooden rowboats that would go out on the lake and canoes and later some kayaks and things like that, motorboats. And so kind of a real, not quite a marina setting, but, you know, kind of a unique boating experience there.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah, this is awesome. So basically, you know, I mean, you grew up around it, boat building and that makes sense where we're at now. How did you take it to, so you have all that, and then eventually you've got these drift boats. What was that like? When did you get into the drift boat building?
Well, the Middle Fork of the Flathead is the southern boundary of Glacier Park. And so even today, there's a lot of boats on that stretch of river. And I think there's two or three raft companies. And there were a few wooden dories on that river that I was familiar with, just a few kind of old timers out of West Glacier. And so that was the first time I was in a drift boat, was on the Middle Fork of the Flathead. And so I knew what this dory was. It was different in a way from the boats that I grew up with, because obviously the lake boats are different with keels and, you know, you still row them. But it was my first experience with that. By the time when I got out of high school, I went to college for engineering initially, architecture, did a few years doing that, didn't do very well, and pretty much just messed around, academically doing well. And then I ended up going out to the coast and getting a job. First, I was doing some logging out there, just trying to make money. And then ended up getting a job with a boat builder south of Olympia, Washington. And that's where I was introduced to fiberglass and epoxy resin. And he was doing a sort of hybrid, we call it wood composite type of boat building. You can call it stitch and glue, but it's a little, stitch and glue is a little simplified for what it is. Instead of having a Carvel planked boat where you have big, you know, say 15 to 20 foot long planks or longer, and you screw these into frames, the sides of the boat are made out of plywood and then sheathed in fiberglass usually. And so I worked for that boat builder for not for very long, actually, under a year, but it was long enough to go like, wow, okay, this epoxy and fiberglass, just a little bit of it in conjunction with, you know, really high quality plywood gets you some really unique advantages compared to a standard framed river dory. And when I came back to Montana, that was my idea, was to start making these boats specifically for fly fishing in a way that that was just different from the framed river dories that you find in, you know, the Mackenzie River and Rogue River boats. And so that was my idea, was just like, okay, let's start making this type of dory, plywood, you know, what we call you know, plywood and composite. And it just kind of took off.
Cool. And who was that? The South Olympia, Washington. Who was that boat builder? Was that a big company or a small company?
Yeah, a great guy named Sam Devlin, and he's still going today. He's a designer and does just some amazing boat designs. You know, has a catalog of plans for boats, from small pulling boats to you know, almost a trawler style liveaboard boats in the Pacific Northwest, very salty, you know, really nice boats. Gotcha. And so, yeah, taught me a lot in multiple ways about this type of construction.
Gotcha. So not necessarily a drift boat builder, but just a boat builder of different types.
Right. Just a boat builder. Yeah. My whole, you know, kind of upbringing and experience is just in just boat building in general. Previous to river dories.
Gotcha. Okay. And I had some questions. You know, we're going to dig into some of the advantages of what you do versus some of the other types of boats, but I wanted to talk about, you know, the boat itself and kind of where you, again, you're getting into this boat building. Where does that design come from? You know what I mean? You've got this drift boat. How do you get, you know, the thing you have, actually, your boats look different than a lot of the other boats, but did you have somebody that you kind of learned the actual drift boat background, you know, design and specs on?
No, I really didn't. You know, when I came back from Washington State, moved back, went back to work for the Glacier Park Boat Company, I was in the Flathead Valley, and there really weren't a lot of drift boats in the Flathead Valley at that time. And you know, I became a fishing guide, and once you do that, obviously you see all of the different drift boats out there. And at that time, there was Clackacraft, Lavro, and Hyde were pretty much the main three drift boat builders, all fiberglass, and of course the Willie boats, the aluminum boats. But Ray Heater was still building his kits. And there was a couple other wooden boat kit companies. So I was aware of the Mackenzie River style of boat, and every once in a while you'd see one in the Flathead Valley. And they're, you know, most of them are made with the, you know, the 48 inch bottom from a standard piece of plywood. And so that's what I did at first as well. Just took a 48 inch bottom and, you know, basically just made a model, like a cardboard model, and tried to do my version of a Mackenzie River style with a constant rocker. And so that was my first boat. It was, you know, probably a 14 and a half to 15 foot long drift boat with a, you know, real narrow beam, 48 inch bottom, and very simple, just kind of bench seats, you know, just three bench seats completely open on the inside. And so that was my first one. And I, you know, I was just like, well, this is, here I go. I'm just going to try it.
Yeah.
And that's what came out. And then later on, just built on that, made them wider. And then it just kind of morphed from there over almost 25 years now into what it is.
Oh, wow. Wow. So yeah, 25 years. And that, you know, and now I'm not sure if we could find that. I'd love to see the original picture. I've just pictured it. In fact, I have Ray Heater. He's coming on here probably in a month or so to talk about his story as well. But I mean, now when you look at your boats, these things look like, I mean, they look like a work of art. What they look like is not just a drift boat. It looks like a mix between a drift boat and something you'd see on the ocean. You know what I mean? Because you've got these compartments, at least the boats that I've seen are compartments on the side, which are kind of like the Colorado compartments, you know, that same sort of thing. But you still have the open area for fishing, right? So it seems like, was that your thought? Was kind of bridging the gap between making this thing look like this beautiful wooden, like almost like a sailboat mixed with the, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How'd that come?
Yeah. Well, you know, with my involvement with the boats in Glacier, all of the guys, all of the boat builders and the pilots up there in Glacier Park, in a way, were all historians as well. You sort of have to be a historian to work on wooden boats. And, you know, Montana has this huge history of boats, basically from the time the steamboats came up the Missouri. And so there's this real connection for me with my boats to, you know, the older wooden boats, and the history of that. And I just love that history. And, you know, probably if you talk to any wooden boat guy for very long, you know, dory guy, coastal boats are, they go back to several designers, mostly on the East Coast. And one of them was Nathaniel Harishoff and L. Francis Harishoff. And so that was a father-son team, and well, not really a team, actually. They came one before the other, but their designs were just so sleek and beautiful, almost all sailboats, and you know, this yacht quality, where a lot of smooth round edges, and you know, in general, just a little bit different than, you know, kind of boxy is the wrong word, but just sort of straight angled sides, straight angled benches and compartments of a Mackenzie River or a Rogue River boat. And I thought, I can do that with this kind of process where you don't have frames. I can incorporate all these things. So I sorted it, tried to have this almost kind of an old 1800 sailboat ethic as far as design ethic and aesthetic to go into my boats. And that's where the rounded stem, you know, the curved stem came from. Which creates a little bit of reverse curve at the bow. And that's a very Harishoff type of detail. So, you know, kind of paying tribute to some of these designers that were, you know, pre-1800s and way predated any other river dory.
That's cool. Yeah. And I guess when you look back in the history, and again, Roger mentioned some of this where, you know, drift boats, he noted how they actually did start in, you know, kind of in Oregon in the Rogue or the Mackenzie. But, you know, the guys that came over, you know, they came over from the East and, you know, obviously brought their design. So it's cool. You've kind of brought this old school thing, and it doesn't seem like there's anybody else out there doing anything close. Are there other boat builders either doing stitch and glue or something similar to what you have going?
Not to my knowledge. You know, there's a lot of guys that are building them from plans, and there are some guys which will now in the internet age, they can look online and look at a bunch of photos and then just start going. So there are a few guys that are out there doing it kind of in their garage and selling a few. Mm-hmm. But to my knowledge, there's not like a dedicated boat shop. that isn't a plank or a frame style of drift boat.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. Okay, well, let's dig into some of the, you know, it's interesting because we've talked, now I've had a few fiberglass boat companies and some aluminum. We've talked a little bit about this. You know, there's advantages and disadvantages of all of them. But looking at your design and the stitch and glue, maybe start us off with the stitch and glue, and you talked a little bit about it, but what is, first of all, what is stitch and glue, and how is that different from just your normal, like, raised river dory wooden boat?
Sure. Well, you know, traditionally all wooden boats are fastened together. They have mechanical fasteners, you know, screws. And so traditional river dory is no different. You have the frames on the inside and you screw the panels on and the bottom panel onto these frames. And that it's a great method. If they're done right, they can last forever. You do have, you know, several hundred ways for water to enter into the hull and into the frames. And so if they're not done correctly, if they're not using the right materials, for instance, a lot of the kit boats that you see, and one of the reasons that drift boats have kind of, or wooden drift boats have kind of a bad reputation is because a lot of them have been made with, you know, say pine frames and really cheap fir plywood, and even sometimes just iron fasteners or not bronze fasteners. Yeah. And so they can, you know, they get water going in there and they can rot. With the fiberglass technology, you essentially can remove the frames from the inside of the boat. You can still have a plywood hull. You can have the plywood bottom panel and the plywood sides, but they're joined together by strips of fiberglass at the chine inside and outside, and what's called a fillet, which essentially replaces the chine log on a framed drift boat. And that's essentially kind of a joint made of epoxy filled with a very fine sawdust we call wood flour, and then fiberglass laid over that, and that creates this very smooth joint on the inside chine. And when you do that, you get rid of all the fasteners. And so once you get rid of the fasteners, you get rid of the water entering into the hull, and essentially you have a monocoque hull. It's much stiffer. It can be lighter because you get rid of the frames. You do add some weight with the fiberglass. So there are some advantages from that standpoint. But you still have the strength to weight ratio of wood, which is very high and quite good. You know, the side panel of a wooden drift boat with you know, a good quality plywood is very lightweight if you were to compare it to really any other material, aluminum or fiberglass. So those are some of the advantages of that kind of stitching glue process. And the stitching refers to taking wire and literally putting a stitch between the side panel and the bottom panel at the chine, and that temporarily holds the panels together, and then you go in there and fasten them with the fiberglass and epoxy. And so yeah, that's in a nutshell is the difference between a stitching glue and a framed drift boat.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, and the advantages are basically, like you said, some of them, this boat is pretty light, and it's lighter than your typical, say, a wooden, like a raised river dory type boat.
Well, again, it depends on the materials you use, but typically it would be much lighter, and also depends on what you want to put in it. You know, yeah. At this point, you know, I'm putting all sorts of stuff
That's
in
right.
my boats, which do not contribute to being a lightweight boat.
No.
It goes the other way. But if you were to take just a standard one, you know, of the same size and shape with three bench seats, yeah, it would be much lighter than almost any boat out there.
Okay. Yeah, and I think of some of the things you're adding that make it look pretty spectacular are, yeah, I mean, just the compartments. I mean, that's something you don't see on many drift boats. You got these side compartments, right, which I'm assuming are completely dry. Is that what do you typically in those things? Is that what do you store in there? Just kind of miscellaneous stuff, or is that kind of where all your gear goes?
Yeah, no, it could be for anything. It's funny, guys that are from, you know, not the drift boat world, they look at them and they go, they think that's where you put your fish.
Yeah, you know? That's right.
They're like, oh, live wells.
Oh, right.
Live well, one on each side. I'm like, yeah, no. But yeah, you know, once I built the first boat with kind of the bench seats, the first thing that you think of is like, oh, I got to step over these bench seats. So I thought I wanted to be able to walk from one end to the other. And at that time, there were no drift boats where you could do that, walk from one to the other. So that was my main idea. In order to do that, I needed to add this longitudinal support member to the side of the boat. And so I added two 10-foot longitudinals, one on either side, and those help stiffen the boat and then also act as a shelf where you can then build what we call dry storage compartments to that longitudinal. And then the other added benefit is that it's a great place to store a fly rod. So all those things kind of work together. And that's how I started doing the dry storage. And, you know, being able to walk from one end of the boat and literally step out on a dry ground is a pretty nice feature. And that's how that whole design evolution went down for me.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So again, just looking at it, there's a bunch of other little features, like the seats are pretty unique. You've got, it's all wood. For the most part, the boat is all wood except for the fiberglass you use when you stitch it together. Is that correct? There's no other, like the whole outside of the boat isn't fiberglass, right? It's mostly wood.
Well, actually, no. Almost 20 years ago now, I started working with a honeycomb material called Plascore. There's a bunch of different cord panels. And some people were experimenting with a foam filled panel. And this company came out with a honeycomb material. And it's not exactly new. If you remember the old Hexcel skis, instead of having a wooden core, they had a hex core for a pair of downhill skis. And this is the same type of material. It's basically a sheet that is 3/4 inch thick, with extruded polypropylene in a honeycomb shape. And if you were to take a section of it out, it looks exactly like a beehive, about pencil-sized cores in this honeycomb shape. So it's air-filled. So instead of having a bottom panel that's made out of, you know, 1/2 inch to, in some cases, 3/4 inch plywood, you have a bottom panel which is 3/4 inch thick, and it's air-filled. And it's super lightweight. It has extremely good compression strength because of all of the honeycomb structure. And then on the inside and the outside of that panel, what I do now is I vacuum bag Kevlar and some kind of strategic carbon fiber into that panel. So it's the bottom panel of the boat actually has no wood in it and hasn't for like going on 20 years now for my boats. And so just the side panels are made out of Okumi plywood. So you have a really light side panel, a really light bottom panel that's also extremely strong with the Kevlar and carbon fiber vacuum bagged inside and out. So you have just a really super light, super strong, rigid hull with that method.
Gotcha. Okay. So basically, and you say bottom versus the top. So like the bottom third is that Kevlar or that mix. And then the upper 2/3 is wood. Is that kind of how it is on your side panels?
No. The side panel is all wood. It's a okay. Mahogany side panel, just like a normal, framed river dory is. Yeah. But the bottom panel is what is that honeycomb material.
Oh, the bottom panel being the bottom of the boat.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. The whole bottom panel of the boat, the whole football shaped, bottom panel is that Plascore honeycomb. Yep. And it's a really great method. Makes it a super lightweight, very strong, takes tremendous hits and abuse. Because this is, you know, one of the few boats where the job description is, okay, you have to hit rocks all day long.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most boats don't have that. There's very few boats where the job description is to just pummel into rocks on a daily basis, even though you really try not to, yeah, obviously.
Gotcha. Cool. And so on the bottom, though, I'm just curious about this because I just had I'm not sure if you've heard of the company Wetlander. They make like a bottom, a slick coating thing. And
yeah, I've used it.
You have, yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah, good. So you've used that. Is it, So on the bottom of your boat, you have this. Do you need something like that, or is your boat good to go just with the honeycomb product?
Well, anything adds to the bottom. So, it, you know, it just depends on how much you want to sacrifice for weight. What I've done for years is have Linex sprayed on. It's really the only thing that we don't do ourselves at the shop. And we've used Linex. I think we were one of the first people, one of the first boats to do it. I'd never heard of anybody else doing it before. And we put Linex on the bottom, and they have the capability to spray that very smooth. And, you know, there's a ton of different truck bed liners out there nowadays, and they're all some sort of, you know, kind of polyethylene or, that you can spray on, but, some are more rubbery than others. And, you know, years ago, like, Rhino linings were, were kind of a more rubbery bottom, and Linex was much more of what kind of a hard plastic, lining. And so that's what we've used with really good results, for many years now. And then I have also, used that Wetlander over the top of that. And that's another really good layer to have on there and just makes them extremely slippery. I mean, they will just slide right off the trailer at the boat ramp with that Wetlander. So yeah, a lot of good products now. I mean, the technology just keeps getting better all the time. And, you know, I'm always on the lookout for something I can improve the performance of the boat while still, you know, obviously keeping within the wooden boat aesthetic as much as I want, as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, this is good. I think this gives us a perspective on what you have going. And I think back a couple, you know, we had, a couple of skiff, you know, we had, Adipose Boats and Boulder Boat Works, on, they talked about, you know, the skiff was a big thing they have going. And it's interesting because you mentioned you had this open thing back when you did this 20 years ago and you opened up the walk around. So were there any of those skiffs around, or was that not there yet? Okay. That's river, they're calling it a river skiff, right? You've seen that with the flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only skiff around was the South Fork skiff, and the South Fork skiff, was a really popular boat for a while amongst guides in Idaho and down around Jackson Hole. And then I don't know why they quit making them, but then that mold came up north, and I believe that was the basis for Adipose when they started making their skiff. And I started making skiffs also probably about 15 years ago. We started making one, which we call the Freestone skiff. And it was the first boat that had the straight line rod storage on the side and the three pedestals in the middle. And it was a punt, so it had a flat transom on the front and then my little rounded transom that I do aft. And so made quite a few of those boats. And in fact, that's one of the boats that I guided out of and I would to this day prefer to fish out of is that skiff. I still have one. And and then I made another skiff. About 10 years ago, I have another model of skiff that I started, which has the kind of recurve sides so that the oar locks are a little bit higher and almost a double ender with two of the rounded transoms. And only made a few of those, but probably one of my favorite boats. So, yeah, big fan of the skiff. And compared to a stand-up, you know, river dory, that's what I prefer to fish out of whenever I go fishing and, you know, there's a couple of buddies and, you know, it's usually guides or former guides and everybody knows how to fish really well. You know, it's like, okay, who's got the skiff? that's what we're using.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. Have you designed, just curious, because we mentioned that Colorado stuff and we had a guest, a couple guests on that talked about that. Have you designed anything for, you know, like the decked over, fully decked over boats for that, that river?
Yeah, I have. I've got a design. I haven't made it public. And it's just a design that I built for myself. In fact, it's kind of our family boat. It's an 18-foot whitewater dory. And yeah, great boat. I really love them. Took it down the Grand Canyon and took it down the Middle Fork of the Salmon and also took it down the Selway River as well, which is always not often used, not often gone down in a hard boat, but I took one down as well.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I love that boat.
Was that a, and I'm looking at one that's the two medicine. It's like a painted.
That's it.
That's it. Yeah. I was wondering. So that's it. So yep. It looks like when you first see it, you're like, okay, that does, because it's got the name. You're like, that does look like a Grand Canyon boat. Although it looks, so it has the full rocker. So it's more of still the Mackenzie style.
No, it's got a big flat section in the bottom. Yeah, it's 18 feet, and it has a quite a long flat section.
Yeah,
it's a little bit wider than a Briggs dory, just a little bit. You know, some of those Briggs dories are only 50 inches. There's a few out there. Most of them now are wider and 16 to 18 feet. And this boat's just right about that size. It's just a little bit wider than a Briggs and about 18 foot four. So it's actually slightly larger than most of them. Doesn't have quite as high a bow. It's about 3 inches shorter at the stem. And of course the whole inside is a different design than the Briggs dory. And, you know, it was just my take on a whitewater dory. I wanted it to be a little more, you know, just a little more of a consistent shear line, not quite as sitting up as high in the water. I guess that comes from my, kind of fishing background where you don't want to have these boats that are like up in the wind a lot.
Oh, yeah.
One of the strange things about it is that it really does slice through the waves quite nicely because of that, that reverse curve in the bow. And it, you know, really performs well in white water. So I've been pretty happy with it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I was curious. I'm always, for some reason, I have this Grand Canyon since I haven't been down there. I'm curious on, you know, taking the drift boat. I mean, what was it like when you went down? Was it pretty, you know, did you get in any trouble or anything like that?
No, had a real clean run. It was, the water was medium high, you know, from, you know, the, how it is over the year. I can't remember the exact CFS, but yeah. Didn't flip anything, didn't hit anything. You know, definitely drove that boat right down through a lot of big waves and just filled it up to the gunnels with water, but it's self-bailing in the cockpits except for the footwell, my footwell where I row, and I have a manual bilge pump in there and also a little solar-powered 12-volt bilge pump. Just to get that water out of the footwell.
Uh-huh.
And because my footwell goes all the way to the bottom, you know, and like a lot of those Briggs are up really high, but I really like to stand sometimes.
Yeah.
I like to stand and push, and I like to stand and look ahead and without, you know, kind of sitting up, standing on my feet, still keeping track of the oars. So, you know, just did a few things different than the Briggs. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Briggs and, you know, the lineage of them coming out of Oregon and, mm-hmm. Martin Litton and all of that history. So I'm a huge fan of those, Grand Canyon River dories, but, yeah, just my take on a whitewater dory.
You're taking, you didn't. And if that boat was the flip, same deal, you could just kind of roll it back over. And is that the,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And I did flip it, on the Selway.
Oh, no kidding.
But I didn't flip it on the Grand. Yeah.
What was that experience like flipping it on the Selway?
Oh man. Just a mistake on my part. You know, it didn't have anything to do with it being a dory instead of a raft. I just, took a line that was probably not the right line and missed an oar stroke and, came up on this big pillow and she just flipped over so quick and washed around into this little rock garden. And, I was, able to flip it back over. I had to, you know, kind of take some stuff out of it. And luckily I washed into this area where I had a pretty easy current and I was able to flip it back over and put coolers back in and continue on downstream. Did a little bit of damage to the transom on it because I have that rounded transom with the handle and that hit the bottom of the river when it flipped. And so I had to do a little repair on the river, but overall fairly unscathed and lesson learned on the line on that rapid. I can't remember exactly what rapid it was, but
wow. So you flip it over. So I've been upside down at least one good time. But you know, I mean, once you flipped it, you know, did you pop right up and then you're next to the boat? And then how'd you flip the boat back over?
Yeah, I just popped right up. I was right next to the boat. One of the oars was in the water, tethered, and I grabbed the oar and was able to kind of swing the boat and direct it into a little pocket. And once it came into that pocket, I just kept moving it until I could get it into a section of river where I could almost use the current to my advantage to flip it back over.
Oh, yeah.
And And just, you know, eventually got it flipped over by myself. My partners in the crew, they were all on the side of the river, like signaling to me because they were going to swim out. And I was like, well, just, you know, I kept holding up my hand, like, hang on. Let me see if I can do this before you, you know, go for a swim to come out and help me. And luckily, you know, it was in a good place. I mean, obviously you can always get into some pretty bad situations with that. You know, you flip a boat, whether it's, you know, on the Grand and you go for a big swim or in a real rocky river like the Selway, you know, and there's no doubt I got lucky about the area where it was, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Big adventure on that one.
Totally. Yeah. It seems extreme. It always seems like obviously the decked over boats, they're floating. So that's good. But just the fact of a hard boat, especially a wooden boat floating down and banging through rocks, you know what I mean? It sounds pretty extreme.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It is, but you know, we flipped a few rafts, on that trip, and I've seen a number of rafts flip, you know, on the Grand, and man, you don't want to have one of those suckers upside down in the river either. Boy, they're just banging on the rocks and
all the
banging
stuff
up the frames
out.
And all your gear, and flipping one of those things is a real ordeal. You know, trying to flip an 18 footer loaded on the Grand, that is no fun. That takes your entire party. So in many ways, a dory is much easier to deal with.
Yeah, I've watched some of the video. There's one really, Oars has a really good video on this boat. That, I can't remember if it was in lava, one of the rapids. It flips, and it shows the whole thing. It shows them going. It took them 3 minutes since they flipped the boat, and then the guy, they had straps on the side. They were able to flip it back over. You know, I think it took three of them. You know what I mean? But like in 3 minutes from flipping to getting it back up and high-fiving, you know what I mean? It's like that quick. It's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, if you have together, you can do it pretty quickly. I think that Jeff Aronson does a lot of videos of Grand Canyon guide. I don't know him personally, but you know, one of the old salty guides there on the canyon, and I think that he's one of the guys that puts up these videos, and you know, just amazing footage of these things going through there.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And what was on that Grand Canyon? Was there one rapid that was really the toughest one, or were they all kind of similar?
Well, lava, you know, lava is always the one that gets your butterflies up. I mean, all of the other rapids I felt were fairly straightforward. Crystal's the other big one, and a lot of people think Crystal's, you know, a little scarier than lava because it has that big rock island in the middle and some really nasty holes in it. And but I was able to skate around the big holes, and you know, it's just so much more maneuverable than a raft. And so really didn't have any issues with it. And lava was a real clean run all the way through and just super fun. I actually did run a video on that one on the boat. So it's cool to watch. I love replaying those and just seeing like, oh man, that was some big water.
Nice. Is that video out there on YouTube or Instagram or anything?
Yeah, it's on my YouTube.
Oh, good.
On my YouTube channel. I think it's Montana Boat or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't really have a big YouTube presence. I'm not hip to all of that stuff quite yet. I want to be.
Sure. But as long as if you got that video, I mean, that's well worth. I'll take a look at that for sure.
Yeah. It's pretty fun.
Okay, well, I think, you know, it feels like I have a good feel for what you have going. I mean, anything else you want to touch on here as far as the boat? I mean, we talked about the boat building. I know I heard something about out there. Somebody was talking about how, you know, to do what you do or the stitch and glue, you kind of need to have almost like a CAD design sort of thing. Is the thing with your boat, do you need to be super engineering background to make one of these things, or what's your take on that?
Oh, no, for sure. You can do one with, you know, I built my first boat. I didn't even have a skill saw. I had a jigsaw and I had two clamps, and I built it in my garage. And, you know, I told my wife, I was like, hey, I think I can make money on these drift boats. And that's the only thing I had. And so we just went for it in the garage. And since then, you know, started selling plans, and hundreds of guys have built these things all over the country. And actually I send plans all over the world. And so I have guys that have built them in, you know, Argentina, converting the plans, and we're talking back and forth, and they're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, with very limited access to tools. So you definitely don't need an engineering background. You know, I do some CAD work, on my boats. I do have a CNC machine, and, for repeatable parts, I do some CAD, to be able to machine parts and make them be repeatable and very, you know, very uniform and consistent. But that's not necessary for the home builder. That's not, it's not, doesn't have to be part of it, but they just keep getting more and more specialized for me. And, you know, I keep getting requests for different things, and now I'm putting little 12 volt systems in them. People want USB ports and, you know, in little interior, you know, kind of fairy lights.
Sure.
I had some customers that they fish so much steelhead, and they're out till dark and sometimes going out in the dark. And so they wanted to be able to, you know, light the inside of the boat. We put 3 propane heaters in there.
Oh, wow.
Just all sorts of crazy stuff. I'm trying to do as much of the building as I can in-house, to the point that we're casting, hinges now, you know, we're casting our bronze hinges. I'm really just not happy with plastic hinges and things that you buy online. So as much as possible, that's the way I'm doing it. And, they're getting to be pretty specialized. So, that's the only, you know, kind of issue. I get a lot of plans builders and kits builders, and they want to do the boats exactly as they see my boats on Instagram or on the website. And I'm like, man, you can do anything you want, but just know that even with 2 really loaded shops, I might take 400 or 500 hours on a particular build with a spray booth and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But I still really, you know, encourage guys to like, hey, build your own boat. I mean, you can do it rather than go out and buying a, you know, an off the shelf boat, build it, man.
That's cool. So, and if somebody wanted to get into building a boat like yours, you could, like you said, they can buy plans just directly from you.
Yep. I sell plans and kits off my website and have for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I have so many designs that I would love to get on paper. It's just so hard to convert everything to paper. And, but I do have 4 designs that I offer as plans. They're for the most part, like the ones that I build. It just depends on how much elbow grease you want to put into them. And,
Gotcha. Okay. And on those plans, so this is interesting. And I just wanted, before we get out of here, because I have had, we've talked, you know, like I said, aluminum, fiberglass, wood, we've got all the thing. When you talk about the difference between, say, what you have going and, say, some of these fiberglass boats, I mean, what is the advantage of this boat? Are there any advantages over the fiberglass? Other than, I mean, obviously it looks
amazing.
Well, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The advantages of getting rid of the frames in the wooden boat and not having that, the issue of having the wood rot is one of the main ones. The second to that, they're so much lighter weight than any of the fiberglass boats.
Oh, okay.
And I like to think that all the features that I have in them stand out as well. Of course, they've almost all been, I would say, how should I put this? Honorably copied over the years. A lot of the boat companies, I mean, they're the curved sides and the recurve style sides and my rope seats and even the rod holders and stuff, you know, you start to see those in a bunch of other designs, and that's fine. You know, the industry, you know, we all can borrow from, it's not like, I didn't borrow from, you know, the Harris shops in the day. With all of that modeled together, I think that it creates a boat which has just a tremendous advantage over any other boat. I mean, I can float down through things that no other drift boat is going through. They're just so much lighter weight. They're very durable on the inside. They're very durable on the outside as well.
Huh.
You know, one of the other things that I like to think about them is that, and I don't use this word lightly in this day and age, but it's, you know, they're sustainable. You know, the plastic boats, and the fiberglass boats, you know, they're at some point they end up in a landfill, and I just don't like that. You know, there's not one of my boats that isn't still going out there in the universe. They're always repairable, easily repairable. The maintenance is quite low on them compared to the old style of frame drift boat. So I think those are a lot of really good advantages to this method. And it's a big thing to me anyway, that, you know, using the best materials, these boats could really be lifetime boats. And so that, yeah, that's one thing that I really point to with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not really in competition with any other boat builder. I just, you know, I might only be doing one or two a year anymore. So that part doesn't really matter to me. But I do like to just use the best materials as possible so that they just have all the advantages that are available.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, and obviously that's one of the, maybe the disadvantages that I'm not sure on the cost, but I mean, obviously if you were to build this boat for somebody, that probably costs a lot more than anything out there. I'm guessing, right, on the market.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, when I first started building, we were pushing boats out for like $5,000, and you know, I was not a businessman. You know, I mean, I started this when I was 25 years old. You know, 25 years later, here we are. And it took me probably 15 years before I was like, oh man, I'm just barely breaking even. Yeah. You know how it is. You're learning how to do that kind of stuff. And when we went over $10,000, the first time we sold a boat for $10,000, I was like, oh, well, that's it. No one's ever going to buy one of these.
Right.
And then it went over 20. And now, I mean, a lot of the fiberglass and other boats are, gosh, they're in the nearly $20,000. And then I just finally decided, like, you know, I need to be able to make a living doing this. I need to charge, you know, a good wage hourly. And that's, so my boats are very expensive because they have a lot of hours in them. And I spend, you know, obviously as much as I can on good materials. And that's another difference that you find in the wooden boat world, is you typically spend more money, on materials, because you want the best quality. And inherently, fiberglass, you know, it's so popular, not because it's a better material, but because it's cheaper. And with the advent of fiberglass, you know, and gel coats and all of that, it's very cheap for a 50-gallon barrel of that stuff. And that's great because you can knock out a bunch of them. They're a much cheaper entry point, and a lot of people can have them and get on the water. So that's a great advantage to them. But it's, to me, it's a disadvantage. I want to use higher quality materials where I can and have these boats last forever.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So basically your boats are, like you said, you could easily pay over 30K for, you know, one of these nice boats like you see out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so weird, Dave, you know, over the years I go, I can't, you know, I'm building these boats, and I get comments all the time online about like 30K or more.
Right.
You've had boats over 40 with stuff. And I just go, you know, some guys just want the best. I mean, you know, they just want to be really comfortable in what they're doing. They want a custom built. It's worth more than the money to them. It's sort of a lifetime legacy project. You know, they might pass it down to their kids.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where that comes from. But yeah, sometimes I just go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is what it is, you know, making river dories for this amount of money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I just, you know, as I'm looking at another boat here on your Instagram. It's a green boat. And I just, the way the sides are, right, it's this very narrow, you know, kind of the bow, and then it goes in this low, and then it's got these curves. It almost looks like, or maybe it's the stealth craft almost. Have you seen those stealth crafts? They got this really curvy, I'm just curious. I'm not sure on the history of that boat. Is that something that is a similar design to what there's our aluminum, I think, right? So it's different, but
well, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't want to, definitely want, don't want to, badmouth anybody, other boats, but, for sure, you know, any of the boats out there that you see with those curved gunnels and sides, I mean, I'm trying to not point fingers or anything, that all came from my boats. You know, we even had a couple of legal encounters with other boat companies where, I said, hey, this is, you know, I have copyrights on my hulls, and they were, and people had copied some of those and were selling them. And in the end, I just decided, all right, I'm not going to be able to stop it. I just need to build a better mousetrap and keep innovating. And that's what I try and do. But any of that stuff, you know, when you see these wooden rope seats and you see the curved gunnels, that stuff just didn't exist, 15 years ago. It was all very flat shears, very straight profiles. And, John Bailey, the son of Dan Bailey, John came out to me and, you know, we wanted to build a boat. And he said, I want to be able to get in and out of this thing a lot easier. And so I want something with some lower sides, but the oar locks have to be high. And I thought, you know, I think I can do this in a really aesthetic way and curve these sides. And instead of having like a straight raised oar lock, because at the time people had low sided boats with the raised oar lock, but it was just kind of a blocky affair. Mm-hmm. And so I built that first boat for John and called it the Recurve. Mm. It's been almost the only hull that I make anymore, because that has been really a successful boat. And so that's how that came about.
That's it. Cool. Yeah. There's all sorts of little design things you see out there. Like the there's one, I think it's Pavati. They have aluminum. They've got like the door up on the front of the boat.
Right.
You know what I mean? And yeah. I always thought that was interesting, because I'm kind of, obviously getting out of the boat isn't that hard, but I guess if you're older, you know, having a door, you know, would be nice. That's not something you've ever.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's a real kind of an interesting innovation those guys have done. And, you know, I just had my knee replaced.
Oh, wow.
So I can really understand how that would be a great feature. You know, it definitely gets harder as you get older to get in and out of these things. And there's a lot of those kind of cool innovations. I've really wanted to build a handicap accessible skiff for quite a while. And I just wanted to be able to make it almost like a landing ramp
where,
you know, folks can get in and out and even row the boat, you know, from a chair or from a limited mobility standpoint. So that's on my drawing board. And,
you
know, maybe someday I'll build one of those. There's so much to do. So many cool innovations that you can do with the Dory platform. And nowadays, man, it just seems to be taking off. There's more and more boat builders, and guys are doing some incredible stuff out there. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. No, I can tell you the for sure, when we post this, when, you know, we get this up there and we post, you know, a picture of one of these boats maybe on our Instagram, it'll probably be the most viewed post, you know what I mean? Just because it's so, not only is the drift boats get a lot of views, but just the design, you know, your boat is so unique. I think that's when I first saw it. So, yeah, it's really cool to be talking to you here. I guess before we get out here, anything in the next 6 months or so, you want to give a shout out? Anything new coming up for you or your company?
Well, you know, from a design standpoint, I'm always working on these plans and trying to get better plans out the door for these home builders, and do have a lot of requests for the Whitewater Dory plan. So hopefully I'll get those out. One of the things that I'm most proud of and I'm trying to work on is I built a boat and painted it for this warrior movement for these kids up on the Salish and Kootenai reservation where my family's from. And we painted it with this warrior logo. And so I hope to deliver that this summer to the Flathead Reservation and, you know, get in with, you know, this an outdoor program up there and get these kids out fishing and in River Dories on the Flathead River. They've got just some amazing resources up there going through the reservation and around that area that is, you know, kind of the homeland for us. And that's one thing that I'm really hoping to get delivered this summer and accomplish, and kind of proud of that. Bringing the younger generations in is, I think, the best way forward for all of the stuff that we love to do, you know, fishing and boating combined. And then other than that, you know, we do have a scenic boat a portion of the company called Freestone Deluxe River Trips. And we do scenic trips, you know, actually most of them are non-fishing, just to really get on the water and enjoy and not be looking at the water, you know, 10 feet, 20 feet away from the boat the whole day, and not looking up at the eagles and the moose and the mountains. And you sit there with a beer in your hand, and people are loving those trips. And we're going to be doing trips on the Missouri River on the wild and scenic portion. Just love all that stuff. Looking forward to more trips everywhere. It's kind of my family's, the thing that we do, you know, and, these river trips are just the best. It's one of the pleasures of life.
That's cool. And I'm looking at another photo I got. I'm not sure if this is in your garage or your office there, but you got your boat. I think it's the one you took down the Colorado, and you're looking out the garage at some mountains. Are you kind of at the base of some mountains? I guess you're in, now where are you at exactly? Which town?
My boat shop is south of Livingston in the Paradise Valley, kind of halfway towards Yellowstone National Park, where the Yellowstone River, of course, runs right through the Paradise Valley. And so I have two shops, and yeah, just a really nice setting. You open the front door, you're looking right out at the Absaroka Beartooth Mountains, and right on the Yellowstone. It's just a great environment. We do a lot of you know, you got to test every boat, so that's the fun part. You put them right the river out your door, and that's a great thing about that's living here.
That's right. All right, cool. All right, Jason. Well, hey, if anybody wants to find you, it's just cajunboats.com.
Yeah, cajunboats.com. Email is the best way for me. And then, on Instagram, we have Cajun Boats as well. And I'm a little bit of a novice on all of that stuff, but just trying to keep a presence on there.
Yeah.
People really love seeing the photos. And so, that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay.
Other than that, it's on the river, Dave.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I hope to run into you out there sometime down the line. It's been a lot of fun connecting with you and hearing the story. I obviously didn't know much about it, and hopefully, some people have learned what you have going. And yeah, maybe we'll see a few more custom boats based on your plans, as we go. So yeah, thanks again for all your time today.
You bet. You bet. Well, we'll have to do a trip together.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links we covered, just go to wetflyswing.com/196. If you can, you can go to our resources page at wetflyswing.com/resources. And this is the place where I put links to some of the books and a few videos, but mostly books that our guests have talked about. So if you want to check that out and see what they recommend. Those are affiliate links, so we get a commission here for the podcast at no additional charge to you if you purchase through those links. Want to thank you in advance if you have a chance to purchase. So I don't have a summary for you today. I don't have a top tips. This episode, I was just consumed and didn't really have a chance of doing that. But I hope you got some enjoyment out of it. I know I definitely love looking at boats. Something I enjoy doing, just looking at a good boat. So when you see a nice drift boat that's got, especially like this one, such style and kind of history and all that stuff, it was pretty awesome. I hope you enjoyed it today. I think that's all we have for you. I want to thank you for stopping by the show today. I appreciate your support and hope to maybe eventually catch you on the river or maybe talk to you online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.